Attention all you rule breakers, you misfits and troublemakers, all you free spirits and pioneers, all you visionaries and nonconformists.
Everything the establishment has told you is wrong with you is actually what's right with you. You see things others don't. You are hardwired to change the world.
You are listening to the Spiritual Activist Radio Show, and I am Rahasia Uncensored, where we look at the world not as it is, but as we know it can be, if and only if we have the courage to question the answers we've been given. This is our world, and it's time for us to take it back. Hello, so here we are again with another show on Spiritual Activist, and I am Rahasia of Rahasia Uncensored. You can pull up a lot of what I say in my interviews, the articles, if you do a hashtag Rahasia Uncensored. Today we're going to be talking to Bob Roth. And I tell you, this was a really, really nice interview I did with Bob. He was introduced to me by Bob Dylan. Bob Dylan is a TM teacher that I ran into here about a year and a half, 2 years ago. I did TM back in the early 70s. And I've had a few transcendental experiences by doing TM also. And I think this is really important in today's world to listen to people like Bob Roth, because he's out there on the front lines and he's doing so much. Let me just read a little bit here. He serves as national director for the Center for Leadership Performance, where he helped to oversee introduction of the TM program in business, industry, and government organizations. Bob Roth has been practicing TM for over 45 years and been teaching for 40 years. And he was raised in the Bay Area. I asked him what got him started in wanting to be in meditation. And he said he was raised in the San Francisco Bay Area and went to Berkeley. And I tell you, that pretty much covers it. If you were doing that in the late 60s, early 70s, and paying attention to what was going on in the world, not getting drawn into the nonsense and bullshit of the media, you really, really started realizing that if we want to make this world a better place, we're going to have to go down into ourselves, into this quiet place. All of the ancient religions talk about the same thing, Nag Hammadi libraries, the Bible, the Essenes, the Gnostics, they all talk about this. And this is the strange part. They talk about it so clear, but you don't understand what they're talking about unless you know what they're talking about. So here's your chance to really look into this a little bit deeper. And when we talk to Bob, I think you're going to see that we're talking to a genuine human being here that's helping a lot of people. He just wrote a book, and he's giving all the proceeds to help young people with meditation in schools. And he's doing a lot of good in the world. And he's interviewed a lot of really, really high-profile people. Oprah being one of the many. And Paul from the Beatles, of course. And the list goes on. But I think you're going to enjoy this, and really listen carefully to some of the science behind this, because it's the science that that answers our mind, so our mind doesn't keep answering and questioning and going into this eternal loop of being critical. And it gives you a chance to open up to the possibilities that, hey, there's something to this. Now let's listen to Bob Roth.
Great. Thank you for having me on your show.
Absolutely. So, we're going to hit the ground running here, Bob. You want me to call you Bob?
Call me Bob. That sounds great.
Okay.
So, are you friends with Bob Dylan?
Yeah, I am. Yeah.
He's great.
Yeah, he is so dedicated, Bob, that I can't even begin to tell you.
Yeah.
The guy is totally into what he's doing and helping people and waking people up, you know.
I love him.
Yeah.
How do you know him?
He got in touch with me because I took TM back in the mid-70s, and I took a refresher course with him about a year ago. And I've been helping him with promoting his events in our area with our magazine.
Great. And how long will this be?
Probably like 45, 50 minutes if you have time.
Yeah, yeah. And tell me, so I want to pronounce your name correctly.
Rahasia.
That's what I thought. Okay.
Yeah.
I'm Bob. That's easier. Okay.
Yeah, I don't even have to ask. I don't even have to ask you how you pronounce that.
Yeah.
Okay, Bob.
Okay, let's.
So, here's the name of the show is Spiritual Activist, and my little subtitle is Rahasia Uncensored. So we'll probably go out of the boundaries of what you normally go through, because I like to ask questions that maybe haven't been asked before, you know? And I think one of the things I'd like to get into is we are living in times, you know, like Einstein said, we're never going to come up with the solutions from the same level that created the problems. Okay, where are those solutions at? They're at a deeper level of consciousness, and probably even pre-linguistic, to where we're going to have an elevated consciousness to, in a Heinleinian sense, to grok that information, bring it back, and figure out a linguistic way to portray that information to the more masses of people that aren't going there. We're going out into the never-never land, sort of like the shamans. You know, for centuries, the shamans, we have given them special dispensation in our tribal communities to go out through either ayahuasca or dancing meditation or drumming or humming, but going out beyond the confines of the accepted parameters of our reality. And they would bring back information to the tribe so they could take the next step in evolution. But I think what's happened over the years is governments, for some reason, and I have my own feelings on this, but for some reason has made that illegal in a lot of ways. You know, the psychotropic drugs, look what we did to the ghost dancers, the Native Americans. This has been going on for a while. So I think what we're doing here is the same thing, except more scientific. And we're going out to get really needed information, because if we don't bring back some really good information for the next step of evolution, personally, I think we're done. We're not going to make it if we stay at this level. And I'd just like to get your feedback on that.
I think any time human life is lived through rigid boundaries, just through the boundaries, the only information we get is through our senses. So I always like it when people say, well, if I'll believe it when I see it. Well, human beings see this narrow band of light, and we can hear through this narrow band what we take as reality through the narrow band of hearing sound. Dogs hear things we can't hear. So the whole notion that reality is to be gleaned just through the senses, even extending the senses through, like electron microscopes in a small way, or Hubble telescope, life needs to grow. Human life needs to expand. We need to grow. We need to break boundaries. Even the word transcend. To transcend means to go beyond ordinary limitations. And these days, on the surface, our sense of transcendence to break boundaries is, well, I'm going to eat at a different restaurant. I'm going to break boundaries, but I'm going to eat it. I'm going to listen to different music. I'm going to go to a different country for vacation. But any change, and you know this, any change that's simply on the surface, materialistic, relative level, horizontal level, the extraordinary becomes ordinary very quickly. True transcendence is accessing the unbounded awareness that lies deep within everyone, that connects us to the wisdom of the ages, that connects us to the unified field of physics. So I think we're living in a very exciting times on many levels, because the boundaries have become so narrow. There's no escape outside. It's all noise, is all consuming, that it's driving us to find silence within. And that silence within, we want to go to that transcendent level. And your mention of science is, the beautiful thing is, now science comes along, overrides the fears that certain believers of religions may have. Oh, this isn't healthy for you. This isn't good for you. This meditation is bad for you. But then science shows the brainwave patterns of that person who's meditating, and it's great. It's healthy. So I know that's a long answer, but I'm just agreeing with you, is that human life hates, we live through boundaries, we live through channels, but inside we have to be unbounded. That makes sense?
Oh, totally. Yeah, absolutely. You want to hear my first transcendent experience with TM?
Yeah.
And it wasn't my last.
Of course.
It doesn't happen every time, as you know. But the first time it happened,
of course,
I was saying my word, my mantra, and totally unexpected it too. I went into this other realm, and I was there for about, 7 or 8 minutes. Could have been 100 years. I don't know. But I still heard the word was like, I'll just say it, word. It was word, 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 word. And it turned into something else so subtle, and my mind kept, it hung on to that word, because I felt like later, I know that that was my lifeline to come back. And as I came back, it turned in from word, word, word. Then I was back. And I went, oh my God. You know, there is really something to this. And then I was hooked.
No, the reality is, there is the waves, you know, in the analogy of the ocean, there's waves on the surface of the ocean. And we're on a little boat, and we're stuck in we're caught in huge tsunami, 50-100 foot waves. And we could think the whole ocean is in upheaval. But it's not the whole ocean. It's a bunch of waves. The ocean in reality is over a mile or 5 miles deep. And the depth of the ocean is silent and unbounded. And the surface of the ocean is turbulent, one wave, one wave, one wave. So transcendental meditation just allows us to go from that surface turbulent monkey mind or gotta, gotta, gotta mind and just dive within gently, 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 as you said, and experience that unbounded, unbounded ocean. Because what is the wave anyway? The wave is just the single wave is just the expression of the infinite ocean. So I think, oh, I'm Bob Roth and I'm 6 foot tall and I like French fries and I don't like this political person or that. It's just a wave. It has nothing to do with the reality. Is the wave is the expression of the ocean. And the reality is every one of us is infinite, unbounded, and eternal. And when you have an experience like that for the first time, it's like, whoa, it's just the reality, but it's so new. But then the next time you have it, it's more familiar. And the next time you have it, it's more familiar, because you are infinite and finite. So that's a great description of an experience. And you're right, it doesn't happen in every meditation. Sometimes it doesn't happen for a long time, but the benefits of meditation are still there.
Yeah, I think when it happened also, one of the things that helped me is, this was back in the 70s, early 70s, and I was into taking drugs, and that kept on for a few years, taking drugs, doing meditations, living the life, you know. But I always remembered the transcendent point of consciousness. And little by little, I started realizing I had to make a choice. I couldn't have a drug high, a drug life, and also do this other transcendent thing. And it also helped me realize also that free will is sort of a misnomer. Because I think we're always going to do what we want to do. It's just that what we want to do gets so harmful, we force ourselves to do something else. But I started getting away from drugs. It started dropping away. Like, I've never had to go to meetings saying, hi, my name is Rahasia. I've been da-da-da. I didn't want to do that. I wanted to be free, completely free. And not only this meditation, but I ended up going to India and taking dynamic meditation. I've done groups where you do active meditations to run that energy out. And I've done this with TM. I've got really active, run this energy completely out till I'm just exhausted, then sit down and do TM. And I even go further into this because I don't have all the body energy bubbling up to my mind. And when it bubbles up to my mind, it translates into thoughts. And then I'm thinking, where's my car keys? I got to go to the store, blah, 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 blah. You know, and the meditation happens at an even deeper level.
Well, mind, body, behavior, the word yoga just means union. Yoga doesn't mean physical postures. It means union with the infinite. And you can approach that yoga union through the body, through postures, through what you're talking about. You approach that through transcending and meditation. You also approach that yoga in personal relationships. You approach that yoga in service. Anything that brings unity. And the beautiful thing is, and your experience of, you have to make a choice. Drugs can open a door, but they can damage the door so it doesn't stay open and can actually damage the structure. Whereas when you just effortlessly transcend, it gives even more experiences, but naturally, right, and in a way your nervous system can sustain it.
Yeah, I've taken quite a bit of ayahuasca. I've had some DMT experiences, dimethyltryptamine, and when I do transcend naturally, I try not to do this because if my mind grabs hold of it, it pulls me out. But I recognize those states of awareness through the drugs, doing it naturally. The big difference is when I come back, I'm completely normal, and whatever normal is, you know, sometimes I wonder about that. But why don't you tell me a little bit about the peer-reviewed studies? And Bob Dylan was telling me, yeah, this is one of the things I should get into, because people want, there's so much out there, Bob, that you have to be using a lot of discernment, a lot of skepticism in today's world. And you almost have to look at it from the heart and the mind to get a feeling to even try it, you know? But peer-reviewed studies, I know, helps a lot of people. They want to see evidence. Like you say, they want to see it before they believe it. And I think science is helping people do that.
Well, the interesting thing is, the word meditation these days, you and I, what year were you born?
1948.
We've been, yeah, I'm 1950. We've been at it a long time. We've been there when the word meditation was crazy, and now the word meditation is becoming mainstream, and now people are trying to profit off the word meditation, and it's a trend. So the word meditation is so general, but research has identified, you know, basic types of meditation, and they say transcendental meditation has the most research for its immediate and long-term benefits to mind, body, and relationships. And a few of the changes that they find take place when the active thinking mind just dives within, settles down, and we experience that calm, that equanimity, that stillness that lies within every one of us. When that happens, because your mind and your body are basically one, it's not separate, it's one system. When your mind settles down, your body gains a state of rest in many regards deeper than the deepest part of deep sleep. So profound relaxation. And when you have that profound relaxation, it allows it allows deeply rooted stress and anxiety and worries and tension to be just dissolved, to be released. And so what they find, there's a a hormone called cortisol. Cortisol is a stress hormone that's secreted by the adrenal glands, which sit atop the kidneys. And cortisol was there from ancient times when we were going to be chased by a lion somewhere and we had to run for our life. Well, now, and you need it because it makes the body tense and run. Well, now we have so much cortisol, it's killing us. High levels of cortisol keep us awake at night. High levels of cortisol over time, we lose our memory. High levels of cortisol make us sick because our immune system becomes feeble. And if you get a good night's sleep, cortisol levels drop about 10 or 12%. But in 20 minutes of transcendental meditation, cortisol levels drop 30 to 40%, which never, you don't see it anywhere else. And that allows your body to purge itself of this toxic chemical of cortisol, so you're healthier. There's another neurotransmitter, which is called serotonin. It's called the happiness neurotransmitter. When a person is very depressed, they have low levels of serotonin, and then they have drugs like Prozac, which are mimic serotonin to make you happier, but there's terrible side effects for some people. And during TM, naturally, there's an increase in serotonin levels. So they find a decrease in anxiety, a decrease in depression, a decrease in insomnia, an increase or an improvement in focus, creativity, clarity. Is this too much detail or is this okay?
No, this is great.
Okay, so one other thing I'll tell you about. It wakes up the two parts of the brain that are essential for creativity. We all want to be more creative. We want to break our boundaries. We want to be innovative. We don't want to feel like we're stale. Nobody wants to feel stale or stuck in a relationship. Nobody wants to feel stale in their connection to themselves. Nobody wants to feel stale or stuck in their work. Well, it all starts from the brain. And there's two parts of the brain that are involved in creativity. One is the size of your fist, and it's right behind your forehead. It's called your prefrontal cortex. That's your executive functioning. That's your decision making. That's your planning. That's your sense of right and wrong, even. That is also judgment, problem solving. Then there's another part of the brain, which is the part of your brain, I was saying earlier, for imagination, for brainstorming, for innovative thinking. That's called the default mode network. In the most creative, when we're stressed, everything shuts down. We can't think clearly, and we're not creative. So there's a suppression of both parts of the brain. Ordinarily, people either can focus sharply with this part of your brain or think, you know, blue sky thoughts with that part of the brain, imagination network. But here's the key thing. The most creative people in the world have both parts of the brain functioning simultaneously. And the imagination network and the ability to focus and put pen to paper. Like a musician has some great, hears some great chords, songs, words in their mind, but then they can focus and put it and play the guitar or put it to paper. Transcendental meditation does that. It wakes up both parts of the brain, and that's why some of the most creative people in the world do TM. Other forms of meditation like mindfulness have their benefits, no doubt, but they suppress the imagination network. So that's a value for doing the transcending. I say it's not a question of what better. I think mindfulness has its value. Transcendental meditation definitely has its value. Why not learn both and use them at appropriate times?
Yep, exactly. You know what you're talking about. I hope it doesn't escape the listener's mind, the importance of what you're saying. I remember Candace Pert saying that every emotion, like tranquility, if you're feeling tranquil, it produces benzodiazepine. If you and I laugh really hard, we're producing interleukin-2, which is the first line of defense against cancer. There's a chemical counterpart to all of our emotions that we're going through. And when you start talking about coherence, my wife and I, we took a neural feedback training. And the whole point of the training was an alpha training. And we noticed that we would go way high in alpha if our mind was in coherence. you know, and just balancing out that coherence through feedback would increase alpha like dramatically.
Yeah, the thing is there's three basic types of meditation, according to brain researchers. In that analogy I used of the ocean, waves on the surface and silence at its depth, the first is called focused attention. And that's where a concentration form of meditation, Zazen, some Vipassanas, where you're trying to clear your mind of thoughts. Thoughts are the disturber, the disruptor of a calm mind, like waves are the disruptor of a calm ocean. So you try and push them out. It requires a great deal of effort, and that creates something called gamma brain waves, which are 20 to 50 cycles per second. And that's where you're really working hard. That's on the ocean analogy, stop the waves. The second, which is open monitoring, and that is like a mindfulness technique. Mindfulness teaches us to be dispassionate, to witness our thoughts, witness our emotions, witness our feelings. Step back. Don't get lost in the feeling of he makes me angry and because he did something to me 2 years ago and now I'm upset. Our present is overshadowed by the past. So mindfulness teaches us to watch and observe the waves rise and fall and dispassionate. And when we do that, the primary brainwave signature is theta brainwaves, which is about 5 to 7 cycles per second. And that's the brainwave pattern, pre-onset dream, but also when you're just following your thoughts, you're watching your thoughts. And the third type is called self-transcending, and that's transcendental meditation. And in that type of meditation, we don't mind the thoughts. We don't push them out. We just slip beneath the waves, settle, dive down deep within, and experience the silence within. And when we have that experience, it creates something called alpha one, which is 8 to 10 cycles per second. And that's, as you know, a state of deep silence and wakefulness and reflection. And during TM, it also spreads the alpha one spreads across the whole brain. It's not just in one part. We're giving your listeners a lot of science here.
Yeah, I hope they're taking notes. So
there'll be a test at the end of this.
So I was talking to Bruce Lipton, and this came up a couple of times about mothers that are living in a stressful environment. If you're living in like a really, really poor neighborhood where you're hearing gunshots all the time, there's robberies. When that fetus is in the womb, it is picking up all of this. And what you're saying about increasing the function of the frontal cortex and balance really comes into play with a lot of people, because in the birth process and in the nurturing process, they have put more growth into the reptilian limbic part of their brain because they think they're being born into a very violent world, that they're going to have to be quick reactions and more physical and less abstract thinking, prefrontal thinking. So anything. And I know a lot of people that's been born that way, and they've been really violent up until they get to a point where they realize the world's not that violent, you know, and this isn't working for my life. So doing these meditations would help them create more coherence.
Well, what it does is there's a part of the brain called the amygdala, which is the reaction center. It's the fire alarm. It's the, you know, fight or flight or freeze. It's the fear center. And what happens when you are, and over time, over evolution, you know, when we were in the savannah, and we were running for our lives, a lion was chasing us, the prefrontal cortex does shut down. We don't have to say, now I wonder how much that lion weighs. That goes offline. And we're just running or fighting for our life. So the amygdala is on. Well, the problem is we're not really usually running for our life. I mean, some veterans who come from harm's way, that amygdala turns on. But the problem is these days in modern society, it never shuts down. So the frontal lobe goes offline. So now that's our rational filter against impulsive decisions. And what takes over is reactivity. And if a mother is highly stressed, traumatized, that gets transferred to the fetus. And so the child, that fetus, that newborn, has basically called the hidden wounds of trauma in the way the brain is functioning. And that's exactly your point. That's why I head up with David Lynch, the David Lynch Foundation. And we're bringing transcendental meditation to hundreds and hundreds of thousands of inner city school kids. We're now talking about bringing this to 1 million Syrian refugees. All these people, human beings around the world, whose amygdala is just on, like, hyper aroused, and it makes them violent. And unless that gets calmed, that's going to be the nature of their life. And that turns into violent behavior, criminal behavior, terrorist behavior. There's no sense of unity there. It's really just me against the universe.
Yeah, I like what David has to say about golf ball size consciousness, you know, and it's true. I talk and I have a lot of input from different things, everything from UFOs to chemtrails to vaccinations. And I've noticed when I talk to somebody and they have what you would identify as golf ball consciousness, you have to really tone it down. And I was actually did an interview with Andrew Newberg. He's a neuroscientist. Yep. And he was telling me, because we were talking about tunnel vision, you know, this very subject. He says, here's one for you. With functional MRI, what we have found out, if somebody has a predetermined set of beliefs that are really limiting and they keep limiting it, he says, think about it. To have a belief, it has to be what? Believable. Okay, if you have a belief that's not based in reality that we walk around in, you have to cut off biology, science, physics, geometry, history. And what you do to do that is you're collapsing neural networks little by little. He says, what we found that they actually have, their peripheral vision goes way, way down. So when we used to say that person has tunnel vision, somehow go ahead.
Yeah, no, it's very true. Every experience changes the brain. So you listen to classical music, it has one effect in the brain. If you listen to heavy metal, it has another effect. If you watch a romantic comedy, one effect. You watch a David Lynch horror film, another effect. And poverty, a child who grows up in poverty, it shrinks the frontal lobe. So this executive functioning, this higher brain, this attention network, it shrinks. That child never has a chance in life. And in the same way, this, you know, if the amygdala is firing, and the other thing that happens even with cortisol. So cortisol, which is that stress hormone, in the brain, the hippocampus is the memory center. Well, this is just even practical for your listeners who don't live in the inner cities, but you wonder why your child who studies hard, does homework, but then come the exam, they're so nervous they can't remember anything. Why? Because the memory center in the brain, the hippocampus, has more receptor sites for cortisol than any other part of the brain. And when the hippocampus or memory center is flooded with cortisol, shuts down the memory. Can't remember a thing. And so that's why anxiety is the enemy of memory. Anxiety is the enemy of anything productive, high performance. You, by doing this show, your brain has to be firing on all cylinders. You got to be listening to this information, drawing upon past experiences, questions. That's an optimum functioning brain. Anxiety, stress, tension, fear, too much drugs, anything, the enemy of that. It shuts down the whole system.
Yeah, that would explain why it is, if I'm trying to remember something, trying desperately to remember it, I can't. But then when I just forget it, you know, an hour later, it'll just pop into my mind. So tell me something. You were actually taught by the Maharishi, right?
No, he taught me to teach TM.
Taught you to teach TM.
I studied with him. I learned in 1969 from my teacher, but then from 1972 all the way up until when Maharishi passed in 2008, I was very fortunate to spend a lot. He taught me how to teach transcendental meditation, and I was fortunate to spend a good amount of time with him over 40 years. So it was a wonderful, wonderful, rare and precious experience.
So, Bob, just talking with you and everything, what got you started? Because in 1968, 69, I was like, I had no idea about meditation. I was still young and partying. What clicked you on at such an early age to meditation?
A really good question. You talked about it at the beginning of your show. Didn't you use the word spiritual activism?
Yeah.
Did you? Yeah. So I grew up in a very political family in the 1950s and 1960s in the San Francisco Bay Area. And I was very involved in politics. My family talked politics all of the time. I worked for U.S. Senator Bobby Kennedy when I was in high school for his run to be the Democratic nominee for president in 1968. And I went and saw him speak in San Francisco on June 1st, 1968. 4 days later, he was gone. He had been assassinated. That was a devastating blow for me. I wanted to be an activist. I thought political activism was the thing that was going to make the change. But I quickly saw, I was attending the University of California at Berkeley in 1968 and 69. I quickly saw that politics would never heal the soul of the nation. It was divisive and destructive. And I still think politics is important, but not for me. So then I thought, okay, education. How about if I get a doctorate in educational curriculum and work with inner city school kids who are never going to get a break from politicians and give them the tools at an early age so that they could rise above their environmental circumstances and have a chance at success in life? And there was this great quote from a philosopher that said, education should not be about filling the pail. It should be about filling the bucket. It should be about lighting a fire. So I'm going to school full time and I'm working full time, and there's army tanks parked outside my door because of the Vietnam War protests. And I was pretty darn stressed. And at that time I decided I didn't want to take drugs anymore. I'd done some. I thought I want something that's sustainable, that lasts. I don't want to go up and then down and up and down. I want to grow it from within. And a friend of mine who I trusted, remember, I was a very skeptical person. I trusted was doing transcendental meditation. And I said, I'm not into crazy stuff. I'm interested in something real. And he said, well, you can do this and you don't have to believe in it and it works. And so I learned it on June 28th, 1969. And one of my first thoughts after I learned it was not, oh, I'm going to get enlightened. My first thought was, I want to teach this to inner city school kids. This is a tool that can change their lives, that they could use their whole lives. So I became a teacher, and I taught for many years, and then I got together with David Lynch, the great filmmaker, and he started his foundation 13 years ago, and now we've taught 600,000 kids to learn to meditate for free, and we're working with veterans, and we're working with women and children who are survivors of domestic violence, and we're in prisons, and we're in HIV/AIDS centers, and American Indian reservations, and we're in 35 countries. So I like to say that my political activism has risen to be a more effective spiritual activism, if you define spiritual not as religious, but as harnessing the full creative potential of the human mind.
Yeah, there is.
Was that too?
No. Actually, the answer to that, if you just said Berkeley, would have been good too.
I could have just said Berkeley and that would have done the whole thing.
So, you know, I'm thinking here. Go ahead. Well, I was thinking that I've read some of the Nag Hammadi library material that hasn't been censored. There's certain parts in the Bible that talks about the kingdom within and listening to the still, quiet voice. The Nag Hammadi library talks about the place of silence to get answers. It's curious how most of our old traditions, the Gnostics and everybody, they have talked about this for years, but unless you know something about it, it's hard to decipher and decode what they're saying because it's been taken over so much by dogma. The same thing that a lot of science has been too. You know, a lot of scientists are being bought off and really put in places of making a lot of money to say certain things. And I think it's curious, as we go deeper and deeper into this understanding, we're going deeper and deeper into the past and realizing that the Essenes and the Gnostics and Nagamati Library and some of the Sumerian scripts and tablets, they've been talking about this, but in their language, with their language terms. But now as we wake up to this, we're re-enlightening ourselves to a truth that has sustained itself throughout the millennia, through our culture. And it's been held intact by groups of people. Some of those groups have been infiltrated too by not too good of people. But some of these groups have held this intact. And I think probably the best information has probably come out of Asia and Tibet, places like that, India. You know, they have encapsulated this information and held it tight for the world. And now it's starting to come out. And it's curious too, because in the Bible, it talks about the apocalypse. And the true definition, originally, it meant a lifting of the veil. And I see that happening. And people are telling me, you know what, this world is so evil and crazy. And that it's been this way all the time. But like in The Wizard of Oz, when you pull back the curtain and see that it's just a frail old man back there, scared and angry and trying to keep us in that low frequency, everything is changing, Bob, everything. And it's independent media, it's people like you and foundations like what you're doing that's helping people wake up to what's behind the curtain. And I think this is the only way out of this, because we have built a civilization that's so precarious. You know, it's like if we built the civilization and symbolized it as a building. We built it on a foundation that was meant for 10 stories, and now we're up to like 180 stories, and we've not only gone too high, but the only way the building can exist and continue is to keep building on top of it. And everything is creaking, and things are starting to become dysfunctional. And sometimes I think of it like, you know, when you're dreaming at night, as long as you're in the dream frequency, everything makes sense. Pigs can fly, whatever, you know, it all makes sense. But what happens as you start to not wake up, but realize that you're asleep and dreaming? The dream starts breaking down and you go, wait a minute, pigs can't fly. And every time we notice something that doesn't make sense, it wakes us up a little more. And as we wake up, the dream collapses because we're entering into a new frequency of decoding our information. And I see
the dream had no reality in the first place. There was no truth to it. It was just a dream.
So this makes
and all of the worries. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, this makes you realize the importance of as above, so below, for one. Because the other thing that happens in the dream, as you're waking up to a new reality, you become less attached to your dream avatar, your dream personality. And that personality that held on tight for existence, you start realizing the only eternal existence that little dream personality will have is going to be in the memory of a bigger conscious mind. And I think as we look at the world, I think we're waking up globally. And if you look around, the same thing is happening out there. Things are not making sense. And every time we see something that's not making sense, like the Federal Reserve System, it's crooked, and we all know this now. We realize that it's capturing us and enslaving us on really subtle levels. But as we realize these things, it's starting to diminish its effect. The government is showing itself for being broken. If it even helps, we start running planes into buildings. We're tearing down this dream because we're waking up to another level of where we're all headed, which is a unity kind of a consciousness. Like you and I sitting here, we look so separate, but I can tell by looking in your eyes, you know, we are one being in this dream communicating from one consciousness.
You're very articulate and you've said it all beautifully. And I think the only last thing I would add is that now the ancient truths of accessing, you know, the Bible says, be still and know that I am God. Doesn't even say read, chant, pray, just be still. And Lao Tzu said, the universe surrenders to he who is still. So in that stillness, in that silence, at the transcendent level of my own individual life, which interfaces with the inner nature of nature itself, that's the field of all knowledge. That's the field where the Gnostics went. That's how they got all knowledge. And it should be accessible now, not to just a few privileged priests who can be, you know, manipulated, but it should be democratized, so that everyone has equal access to that. Everyone can be their own seer, their own knower. And no one can keep that for no government, no economic institution, no educational institution, no political, social institution can keep me from accessing that field of all knowledge, liberation, my own self. You are, you're a very wise soul, and I'm glad I got to be on your show.
Yeah, this has been really nice for me too. Yo, before we go, there's a couple things to do. One is to say the website that you'd like people to go to, because this is also going to be on YouTube. Okay. And a few other things too, but the radio show.
Great.
Yeah. And the other thing, I'd like to hit a little more science behind how does this affect the metabolic syndrome that you guys talk about?
Yes. Yes. So I have about 5 minutes. So to find out more about transcendental meditation, you can go to www.tm.org, T for transcendental meditation, tm.org. To find out about the work that we're doing with these at-risk populations, you can go to davidlynchfoundation.org. I also wrote a book that was a New York Times bestseller, funnily enough, which is called Strength in Stillness. And you can get that. I'm donating 100% of my proceeds that I get for writing the book to teaching inner city school kids to learn to meditate for free. Now, what metabolic syndrome, what all these different things do is the body is an engine. And if we can, you know, you can't fix a computer if it's running. You can't fix a car if you're driving it. It's when you turn off the car, when you turn off the computer, then you can do the repair work. All right. These different syndromes, whether it's metabolic syndrome or in a bipolar syndrome or disorders, all these things, as you know, they're just the engine is out of balance. It's stressed. It's been traumatized. It's twisted. It's not working properly. And there's many pills we can take, medicines we can take that address the problem on the surface symptom. And different exercises and different foods we can eat that help. But when you allow the system to transcend, your mind to transcend and experience that profound, silent, quiet state before language, as you were saying, before desires, before individual ego, thoughts, feelings, or action, that unbounded field of my own big self, that's the field of perfect health. Because the system is perfectly balanced. And then what happens is it allows the body to reflect that balance. And so what they're finding, there's now 400 scientific research studies that have been conducted, published in peer-reviewed journals, American Medical Association, Journal of Hypertension, American Medical Association Journal of Stroke. The other one is the American Heart Association, those, stroke and hypertension, the American Medical Association, no friend of meditation. They published a big study on reduction of metabolic syndrome, which is a precursor of heart disease. It's a profound imbalance with high blood pressure, insulin reactivity. So that balances out. $26 million has come from the National Institutes of Health to study the effects of TM on stress and high blood pressure and heart disease. $2.5 million from the Department of Defense showing that TM is more effective than anything else for reducing the symptoms of post-traumatic stress in Iraq and Afghanistan war veterans. And even now a big study that's going on in the toughest schools in Chicago. The toughest schools in Chicago, most violent schools, were doing a study with 2,000 kids, and they're finding that the kids are doing better in school, higher graduation rates, higher attendance rates, and less violence and fewer arrests, because Chicago is a war zone, and the public schools there are loving transcendental meditation. So all of this is happening because of the science that documents its benefits. And I really appreciate your focus on science, because that's what's really going to lead the way.
Well, I think it was Mark Twain that said, facts can be a pesky little thing.
Give me your mailing address. I'll send you a copy of my book. It's a good one. If you email it to me. And if anybody has any questions, they can email me, and it goes directly to me. Bob@davidlynchfoundation.org. That's my personal email, bob@davidlynchfoundation.org, and I'll answer any of your listeners' questions.
All right, Bob, that's really great to know. And I really appreciate your time, and it's been a true, true pleasure to talk to a kindred soul about some of these things. I don't feel quite as alone. So thank
you. Let's do it again sometime.
That sounds like a plan. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Okay, that was a great interview with Bob Roth, and it's really nice to know that there's people out there trying to make this world a better place on every level. So thank you for listening, and if you want to get a hold of Bob Roth, remember you can email him at bob@davidlynchfoundation.org. And you can always email me also at info@lotusguide.com. That's info@lotusguide, LOTUSGUIDE.com. And maybe for our next program, I have a interview lined up with Greg Braden coming up here pretty soon. So that's going to be a good one too, because what we're doing is we're reaching out to people all over the place that are doing what they can do to lift the intelligence and the consciousness and the awareness of people. And we do this through all kinds of inner reflection and all kinds of studies and workshops and classes. So get out there and get busy and show up. That's the main thing, is showing up. You'd be surprised what happens. Even if you're unprepared, you don't know exactly what you're getting into, show up. That's the whole point of life, showing up. Take care, and I'll see you in a couple of weeks.